Hello, and welcome to the Astro City Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting Kurt Busiek's Astro City series. In this Astro City Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Astro City Samaritan Special Number 1 from 2006 and Astro City Beauty Number 1 from 2008. James, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. Now, this Samaritan Special was released on July 26, 2006, which was between books 1 and 2 of The Dark Age.
Okay.
And then Beauty Number 1 was released on February 13th, 2008, between books 2 and 3 of The Dark Age.
Okay. So I read them in reverse order. I read Beauty first and then Samaritan, but I don't think it really matters.
It doesn't. I think there's very little grounding either of these into a particular point in time. I would say the only thing I caught was there was a line in the Beauty special referencing Leo.
That's right. Yep, that was in there.
And even that was, I think, a flashback thing. So, you know, hey.
I really did enjoy both of these issues for being kind of big, oversized issues dealing with a character or characters and fleshing it out a little bit more. And they really worked for me.
Yeah, both of these were 40 pages, which is why we're only doing two versus normally we do four issues. But normally we do four 20-page issues, so two 40-page issues. It's about the same amount of content.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what did you think of the Samaritan special?
I liked it. The character we've never seen before, that guy, I guess we're calling him Infidel.
Yeah, Infidel. His name is Kiyu or something like that, but Infidel's what he goes by.
Yeah, so I kept calling him Infidel because I was going to butcher the other one. I liked the character. I liked the origin story. I thought he was cool. I'm not a big fan of magical characters in anything in comics, but it's the perfect character to be in opposition to Samaritan, being the Superman character.
Mm-hmm.
And so, just like we see Superman with magical characters and doesn't do well with it, they are kind of like two Omega level characters that have grown to respect each other because they can't take each other out.
What I loved about this is this whole story is a riff on the Superman versus Lex dynamic.
Yeah, definitely.
And doing it in a way that's very different because Infidel, while he has some similarities to Lex, is fundamentally different than Lex. If anything, he's as much like Doctor Strange as he is Lex Luthor.
Correct. He's more like a mesh of the two. He's the magical character mixed with Lex Luthor's intelligence.
Yeah. Well, and I think this whole story could have been told. I mean, it was told from Infidel's point of view, but if Astro City, the franchise, had been told from his point of view versus Samaritan having been the first good guy we met and stuff, you know, we could have seen all of this play out exactly as was with Samaritan playing the role of the bad guy.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I really did like this character, Infidel, even though I don't like magical characters, because, like you said, it's more that Lex Luthor to him, that the search for knowledge. From the beginning, just being a boy and wanting to learn more and more and more, took him to Zanzibar to see the slave markets, took him to Arabia, where he basically becomes a wizard.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just interesting to see his journey and development, and then him coming into butting heads with Samaritan later on.
Yeah, well, he's got an insatiable curiosity as a boy that leads him down this path. And his, I was going to say origin, but really his motivation is so similar to Samaritan. I mean, they are flip sides of the same coin in so many ways. They have the same root power base, this Empyrean fire or whatever it was that powers Samaritan in one way. He's using for magic and stuff, so he's channeling it a different way. But Samaritan was sent back, we learn later, to go make a change to the time stream or whatnot, or maybe we've already learned that, I forget. But Samaritan's origin saving the space plane essentially wipe out Infidel's home base in the future. So he's coming back to undo that, but both guys are immune to the other guys messing around in the time stream. So there's very much a butting heads of both trying to put back what they felt went wrong, and getting to be at an impasse. And when they both finally realize this is pointless, we're too evenly matched, they basically decide, okay, we can't keep fighting. They essentially destroy the universe.
Yeah.
So they fix that and say, okay, let's not fight, but let's at least check up on each other once a year and And really, I think it's Infidel who takes kind of the higher road there, because he's the one who's sitting outside of space and time and whatnot, not interfering. Whereas Samaritan's going and continuing to interfere with the timeline, arguably.
Exactly. Yes, Samaritan's still trying to, but Infidel is, like you said, taking the high road. And I thought that was just fantastic how they literally almost have these peace accords where they meet once a year because they can't take each other out. But at the same time, you want to keep things in check because they can mess things up or make your life difficult. So they sit down, they'll have some tea, have some coffee, talk, shop what's going on, and call it a day. And because of respect, and they can't take each other out. It was a beautiful story, and I really liked the balance there.
Yeah. I think it could have been interesting if this had been told with thought balloons on both sides.
That would have been terrific to see what the other was thinking.
Because there were a couple of times Infidel's like, well, he clearly did this because of that. And if, you know, and he makes a snide comment or whatever, and Samaritan makes a response indicating he was none the wiser of any of that. But to see if, okay, was he playing? Was he, you know, just messing with the other guy? Or what's going on there would be fascinating. And again, the fact most of this story is narrated from Infidel's point of view, and we need that to get his backstory and stuff. But the epilogues kind of sort of for both of them of, oh, I think I'm wearing the other guy down. They were hitting the same notes in very different ways, reflecting again, these guys are more similar than they are different.
Yeah. A flip side of the same coin, essentially.
Yeah. And I thought we got some fun stuff. And again, through the flashback, this really, in the span of 40 pages, I think, builds up these two as, again, the Lex Superman dynamic that took decades to really form over in DC Comics.
Yeah. I don't remember reading Infidel much more beyond this special. Do you remember him in future issues?
I don't.
And he's a fascinating character, but that just speaks to the depth of Astro City, that he'll throw out this amazing character and this amazing counter to Samaritan. But there's so much depth there that he doesn't even have to revisit the character, or he hasn't had a chance to at this point.
Yeah. It's funny because in some respects, I see Kurt Busiek here as a bit of a trailblazer. And if he had been in sort of the Stan Lee position back in the day, where Stan, Jack, and a couple of other key guys were laying the groundwork of what today is the Marvel Universe, but other people were later coming in and running with those things later. Granted, many cases, it was 50, 60, 70 issues later.
Yeah, many.
But imagine if you had somebody like this team here doing what they're doing in Astro City, but you had talented people coming in behind them, and it's like, okay, let's see a little bit more of Infidel, or this other character, or this group, or what have you. They could have very much built this into a very full universe.
It really could have. To that point, this is like a Jack Kirby and Stan Lee universe that was being built here in Astro City. Mm-hmm. And it's just the two guys versus having the bullpen that are going out there and writing, you know, 20 books out of this universe. There's enough characters there to keep this thing alive and to do crossovers, to do events. But it's tucked away, and I'm happy for what we have.
Yeah.
But I am curious one day if Kurt Busiek may pass one day, and Brett Anderson, we're all going to pass one day. If somebody takes up the torch and revisits these characters and tells new tales.
It would be very interesting if, when those guys retire, they kind of gifted this to younger creators they thought could carry on of the same quality. Now, I don't expect that to happen. If I were in their position, I don't know that I would be able to pick somebody who I thought would be able to do it justice, but it'd be cool if that happened.
It would be cool, and I'd love to see it all play out, but this has been fun. The Samaritan and Infidel story was a ton of fun, and the Lex Superman play is terrific, and it was done fantastically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in a way that was clearly reminiscent of that without regurgitating that.
Correct. It's completely different.
Yeah.
And a tip of the cap to it.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is there are aspects of Infidel that reminded me of Kang and a few other characters here and there.
Yeah, Kang for sure. The time.
Yeah. Well, and I love how when he realizes Samaritan's still dating Winged Victory and stuff, he's like, oh, I can tell you how it ends.
That was funny.
Just the way they kind of needle each other. So I do hope at some point we get to revisit this. But the other thing I'm thinking is even if these guys don't get around to that, sooner or later, this is going to enter the public domain.
It will, eventually.
And if people are still reading comics, if people are still reading, if people remember this material, and I think if comics are still around, this will probably still get remembered. Whether it's still relevant at that point is another matter. But man, that would be very interesting to see other people again doing a riff on it decades hence.
It would be. I would be excited to see it.
Anything else on this one?
No, let's move over to Barbie. I said Barbie. Beauty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this one is so much the story based on a character so clearly based on Barbie. It's not even funny. They're not trying to hide it at all. And this is one of the more unusual characters in Astro City.
Yeah, I would say very unusual. And the timing of us reading this couldn't have been better with a Barbie movie having just come out and she's back in the zeitgeist mm-hmm. out there. But yeah, very different than anything else because she's not even human. She's another thing. You know, an android, I don't know.
Well, the whole gist of the story is she's not sure what her backstory is, and we're learning it in some cases along with her, in a few cases a little more than she does.
Exactly.
But there's the question of, was she an actual beauty doll that was, you know, somehow brought to life like Leo was the cartoon? Was she something else? Is she somebody who was human and then turned into this? And we get that answer.
Yes, we do.
And there came a point where they teased one thing here about probably, I don't know, 3/4 of the way through. And I'm like, yeah, okay, that's it. That makes sense. I get it. And it takes a little while for it to play out a little further. But a lot of the story is about her, again, not being human, not being conversant with people and things of that sort, and just being out of sorts at the moment and trying to figure out her place in the world. Now, granted, she's been in this world, it seemed like, for decades, but it seems like she also goes through this periodically.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, seeing Barbie deconstructed, the beauty deconstructed here, and seeing that play out, like you said, trying to figure out who she is and taking that path over and over and over again, we come to find out, is just, it's a story that we've kind of seen before, but it's done in such a special way that you feel a lot for the character, even though she's not alive like a human being. It's hard to explain. You know, she's a character of plastic, but she has essentially a soul.
She's the equivalent of Red Tornado or The Vision.
The Vision would be perfect. Yeah, Red Tornado, perfect.
And there were some lines of when she was seriously injured and had to be kind of repaired and rebuilt.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. First did it one time. One of the members of the Honor Guard did it another time. And they had recognized similarities to a villain or whatnot, but it's like, this is far more advanced. So there are definitely both the Barbie toy riff that they're doing on, but also riff of classic characters in comics and stuff.
Exactly. They're meshing the two.
Yeah. And what I loved was they stuck to the bit they were doing in terms of when she's going around town trying to figure out, well, what am I going to do tonight? And she winds up back at her apartment. And we've got this one shot where she's got a minimalist kind of furniture layout with absolutely zero things on it. No magazines, no nothing.
Exactly. Plain.
You know, almost like an empty dollhouse kind of a thing. The only thing that sets it apart is kind of the picture poster thing or whatever on the wall. We then cut to her closet, which seems like it's filled to the brim. Probably is a spare bedroom, not an actual closet. But then when she walks out of this, we get this shot of the main room. There's like nothing.
Yeah.
And it really plays into the bit of if you look down a Barbie toy aisle or whatever, you've got all the outfits, all that kind of a thing. You've got the dollhouse or whatever, but you don't have any life. You don't have any clutter. You don't have any human things.
Yeah, it's almost void of life. It's void of the little human messes that we have, you know, leaving a spare magazine or leaving a comic laying on the table, you know, something like that. And that's exactly it. It's perfect. It was a perfect picture. I loved how he deconstructed this and how he set up through the art and through the words the struggles and what's going on and how this character interacts and how it's cold and yet humanized at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Just hearing Beauty walking around and bumps into a guy and says, hey, I'm skin and butt and breast, but I don't have any genitals. And the guy's like, the look on his face, but because she gets hit on all the time because she's very pretty, like a Barbie doll. And it just pushes him away.
Well, and it gives the clear impression that this has not happened to her once or twice or even 100 or 2 times, but over the decades, this is like a recurring thing on a super regular basis, like multiple times a night or whatever. And she's finally like, let's just cut to the chase.
Yeah, here you go. And the guy's shocked, but it speeds up her life because she has to move along. Okay, I can't go through this again and again and again. I've been through this so many times.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was fascinating. And it was also fascinating to see her when she went and she was around gay people in the comic, that she felt like they treated her different and saw her differently because they weren't looking at her as an object to be used.
Yeah, when they have the flashback, I think it was 1978, where the lawmen are attacking the Astro City Gay Freedom March and she saves the day, it seems like the gay community practically adopts her.
Yeah, and I thought that was just really, it was nice because she is accepted by the people who aren't always accepted in the norm,
mm-hmm.
because she is different, just like they are different. And it kind of brings them together and they treat her like a real person, just like I'm assuming sometimes in periods of time, maybe a gay person doesn't feel like they're treated the same as everyone else. And so that totally worked. It totally played that riff. And whereas, you know, the flip side, you can see most guys, you know, this beautiful Barbie doll. Yeah, they're going to hit on her. She shuts it down rather quickly.
Well, I think everybody falls into the us and them and into that them group at times somewhere in their life.
Exactly.
Some on an everyday basis, others not so much. But the way they played up like the gay community being able to relate to her in some ways, but are still different than her. And that even at times she has I don't say a different set of problems with them, but what they're expecting and wanting out of the conversation or whatnot and what she can give kind of differs or whatever.
Yeah, it really worked nicely. I thought that played into a way to talk to a straight person about someone who's in the gay community, maybe see how that may feel, being mm-hmm. treated completely different through the eyes of Barbie in the comic. I just thought that worked really well. It's a perfect character to do this.
Yeah, I think it was a great, great way to do it. There was a line in here somewhere. I forget where it was, but it was around how she's not like other people. And there was a line of their lips move when they talk.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was an easy thing to miss, but you realize she is got, to a degree, limited articulation and stuff like that. So this would be the sort of thing, if they did this as a TV show or something like that, getting this character where she's got enough of that Barbie articulation or lack thereof in some respects, yet not being totally off-putting either. This could be a character that would either come across super creepy or, again, a little tragic as she is here.
Exactly. This was definitely more tragic, but I could see how that could come off completely creepy and you're like, oh, this is weird. Is this a horror show that we're watching here?
Yeah, even in the hands of a different artist, it could have been that way.
Oh, yeah. But I did like MPH kind of being the hero in the story. Not saying that Beauty wasn't a hero. She was very heroic throughout here.
Well, he was being the friend she needed.
Exactly, and discovering her origin. And it does get told to us how she came about. And it's a little bit sad because she's been wanting to know where she comes from and she keeps getting rejected by her maker.
Mm-hmm. And there was a few pages where it's clear to, at least to me, I assume to you too, who the maker was going to be.
Yeah.
She's going to go confront the maker, but that takes a couple of pages to get past a hurdle, which was, again, kind of creepy and made a certain degree of sense.
Yeah.
But then when all is made clear to us, not to her, and then MPH comes back in, and he handled that so well.
He really did. He handled it very maturely. He was respectful of the feelings that were there mm-hmm. on both sides.
On both sides, yeah, yeah.
And was able to convey them so that the creator understood. And then when she understood, I think it's going to bring it to resolution as we go on. And I like that.
Mm-hmm. I think when he pointed out what Beauty was looking for, what the creator was looking for, some similarities and how certain cycles were repeating and stuff, it was a lot of fun. It was interesting. I'll be honest, I was half expecting MPH to tell the creator, you know, you do have a gift here. You should use it. I mean, in other stories, this would have been join the honor guard.
Exactly. I was wondering if they were going to take that angle too, because that is a huge power. And so that is something that could be very useful. And to see it, and I hate to say being squandered, but a squandered way.
Absolutely squandered.
Yeah. You're like, okay, here you are doing this. You could be doing something way more impactful, but there we are.
Yeah. Well, and the quasi-villain of the piece, although he's mainly seen in flashback of Dr. Gearbox, reminded me so much of Gizmo and all of the other kind of toy men and gadget guys we've had over the years.
Yeah, he was very nostalgic, even though we've only seen him here. But he's representative of other characters that we've had.
Yeah. Well, and again, that's part of what I love about Astro City is they understand the archetypes, the tropes, and mix them together in fun and different ways. We've seen the genius create the life form. Usually it's to go sabotage the superhero team or whatever. And there are aspects where there's some of those plot points being used here, but not in that combination, not in that way. But to also get the, again, the gadget type guy, we got, again, great, probably the best development we've gotten from MPH, certainly to date, and I don't know that we get a whole lot more development of him later on, because he's usually just kind of zip in, zip out.
Yeah, this was his character moment.
But also, the callback to Leo and how that storyline and the impact of that decades back kind of impacts what can happen with beauty and how that plays in. It wasn't a major part of the story, but it was, again, a fun kind of callback and stuff.
It was a ton of fun. I thought this was done so well. Just an aside, have you seen the Barbie movie?
I have not.
Okay. I'm just curious, if you and your sister decide to watch it and do a recording on it, I'm just curious if this impacts your view of that movie. You know, I felt like the movie was such a deconstruction of the character, and then we have the same types of things going on here years and years earlier.
Well, decades earlier, yeah.
Decades earlier, yeah. So I thought it was just very clever. I'm just curious what you guys would think of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the other thing that I found of interest here was on kind of that title page where they give the credits and stuff, and it was done almost in a toy ad kind of style. There's a dedication there to who I assume is Brent Anderson's sister.
Oh, yeah. I didn't notice that.
Cinda Renee Anderson.
Cinda? Okay, yeah, there. Okay.
And I think that would only be like 2 years younger than Brent, and she would have passed away, I don't know, a year prior to this, maybe.
Wow. Wow.
So I've got to imagine that played into the story in some way.
Definitely. Now, just out of curiosity, reading the two stories, was there one that you liked better or that you thought was a stronger story than the other?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I really liked the Superman-Lex dynamic and stuff with Infidel and Samaritan. I thought there was a lot of kind of back and forth here. With Beauty, I found it, again, to be such a different take on, again, the Vision, Red Tornado kind of a character. And this is a less used kind of trope than the archenemy kind of a thing that we had with Superman and Lex.
Yeah.
And this one with Beauty, there was a place or two where it dragged a little bit.
It did. There was a few.
I mean, I certainly thought this was well done, but like the hurdle she had to overcome before confronting her maker and stuff took a few more pages than I felt maybe was needed.
I can understand that. Yeah. Yeah.
But I also liked here where we get a surprising amount of information about the history of the Onagar just kind of dropped in here and there.
It's just a total boom. Here it all is.
You know, there's a little bit of, oh, you know, Hummingbird has just joined. Energy knew Hummingbird's mother, but it was a different Energy. He was just a kid at the time, and Quirrell's dating Crackerjack and somebody else. I guess it was MPH, doesn't really approve of that because it usually doesn't end well. So little things like that just sprinkled throughout this, and I felt we had a lot less of that in the Samaritan special.
I would agree. I felt like the Beauty comic was very different than anything Astro City that Kurt Busiek and Brent Anderson had done. And I don't know if it's just because, I think it was because it's this Vision type character or the Red Tornado type character and trying to put life into something that's essentially kind of lifeless. I found it kind of cool and different. I mean, I love both stories, but I think I went towards Beauty just because of that.
Interesting, interesting. I mean, to me, it's another exploration of another character.
Yeah.
And I don't say that in any sort of a bad or condescending way. That's what I love about Astro City, is they'll spend 40 pages on something like this. But again, I kind of feel that, well, I was going to say a majority of the stories fall into that category, but if you take out the 16 or so for the Dark Age, which went on a little too long.
Yeah, those did.
And was as much not about the two brothers as it was about them. To me, this falls right in line with what I expect out of Astro City. The two stories are very different in some respects and very similar in some respects.
I agree. Yeah, they are very different, and yet they do kind of follow a time-tested method that they've created, this creative team.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. It works beautifully.
Well, and Astro City is a periods plural piece, because again, we go through so many years of time in both of these stories. Different stories in other issues are set in different points in time. Some are clearly the 70s, some are, you know, present day, whatever that present day may be. But I feel that gives it a intentionally dated yet timeless aspect to many of these stories.
I would agree with you there. They do feel old-timey and yet like timeless at the same time. It's weird. It's very unique.
Well, and certain characters are very much of an era, and they can just put them in that era.
It's true. One thing I will say, I prefer the Astro City stories where we do a story in an issue, max two, because we did the Steeljack, which was kind of intermediate.
That was another one that went, what, five or six, maybe seven, actually.
Yeah, that was a little bit too long, I think. And then when they went to the Dark Ages, that was way too long with those characters.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think their bread and butter is one to two issues per thing. That's what I enjoy the most when I'm reading Astro City.
Well, I think it comes down to, this is the equivalent almost of a sniper shot. Let's zoom in on something, take aim at it, and really go into it. We could have had Beauty just kind of these tidbits tossed out over the course of 80 issues or something, and it would have been too spread apart. We wouldn't have really gotten the thing. The clues would have been there. But the fact that we can spend the equivalent of two issues here under one cover, which I think was a better move because they didn't have to break it awkwardly in the middle.
Yeah.
To explore her, and then, okay, let's zoom out on that. Let's go target another character, be it Infidel or whatever. I think with Steeljack, there were two or three issues where that story was kind of active yet parked as a framing sequence so we could dive into other characters that played into the larger picture.
I agree.
But that felt neither fish nor fowl. They weren't their own issues, yet they were part of the other, but weren't part of the other. But yeah, I agree that the issue or two focus on some aspect of the city, some character, some team, something is really the bread and butter of the property and where they shine.
Yeah, it's where they shine, and it's where I think he spends enough time on these characters that you grow to have an affinity or a love for the characters, or disdain if that's the intention. But when you spend that amount of time, I'm like, wow, I really like Beauty. Do we see Beauty again? Who knows? You know, will we revisit her?
I think we do, but we don't focus on her.
She's in the background. But now you've grown an affinity for her, so when you see her in the background, you'll really like that character. You'll be like, oh, I love her.
Exactly. I think there's a before, during, and after for almost every major character in Astro City where we had seen Beauty before.
Yes.
Now we get to know Beauty, and we will see her after, and we have a different take on her then than we had before.
Exactly. More of an appreciation, because we know who she is and her struggles and things that she has gone through.
Yeah. I think for a lot of characters, there's that clear mile marker of we knew of them, and then we get to know them, and then we get to see them again. Other characters, I think that's a little less clear. I would say it's less clear for Samaritan, Confessor, certainly Steeljack, and the Williams brothers. And part of it for many of those characters, less so for Samaritan, though, is that during part was prolonged. Because even the Confessor one, the current Confessor, we spent time with that guy as Altar Boy, etc., for a couple of issues, six issues, I think.
Oh, yeah, we spent a lot of time with him.
And it was good. I enjoyed that arc quite a bit. But again, Steeljack, we spent a lot of time, and we'll spend some more issues with Steeljack. Samaritan, we got at the beginning. We get a few other places where we dive in, like the date he had with Winged Victory to begin with, that I think there's a less clear, when do we really get to know Samaritan?
Yeah, Samaritan, he uses as the heroic figure, the leader, almost like that placeholder for everything that's good and the Boy Scout, the Superman of the world. But we don't really get to know his struggles that much. And there's a lot to be told there, I think, if he wants to really go in depth.
I think the most we got on that was the date with Winged Victory.
Correct.
Where we started to see how they were having almost a philosophical debate over dinner.
Exactly. That was funny.
Yeah. But I'm really hoping they get Astro City kind of back off the ground and going again, because we've only got another Astro City spotlight or two before we get into the third volume, which ran, what, 52 issues?
Yeah, and then it kind of is finished up after that.
Yeah, there's a special or two here and there and whatnot, but we're basically at the halfway point of Astro City.
Wow.
I think we're maybe a page shy of it, but we're for all intents and purposes, have read half the property now.
Yeah, and it feels like we've still just scratched the surface of what's there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're catching up on it really quickly, and we will surpass what their output. And since we've started recording this, I don't think any new material has come out.
No. Again, the last thing was that was then, this is now, special teasing a new story, but that's been almost 2 years now.
Yeah, and that's a little disappointing. I mean, I know people have lives and things happen, but I am hoping that they get together and give us some more issues of Astro City, whether that be new characters, new stories, just revisiting some of the classic characters, or heck, even if they want to put together that omnibus, I'll take that.
Yeah, the omnibus will probably be the next thing that's released. But we're getting to the point where these guys are old enough that not only do I hope they do it, but I hope they pick and choose and prioritize their stories appropriately, because Brent, I think, is, I want to say, around 70 now.
Yeah.
Kurt's got to be roughly the same age. Alex Ross might be a little younger than that, but even so, I mean, these guys aren't going to live forever.
Yeah.
And I want more Astro City.
Me too. So keeping my fingers crossed, but I'm understanding of these guys are probably tired. They've done a few rounds in the ring and they're enjoying their later golden years, but I'm hoping they have a little bit more left in the tank and give us some more enjoyment.
Yeah, I just don't want the last thing we get to be a tease for a story they never tell.
Me too. Me too. I'm right there with you. But I was happy with these two issues. I thought they were fun.
Yeah, I thought they were a lot of fun. Both you could read again in either order. You don't have to have read anything of Astro City to understand these things. If you have, you'll recognize a couple of characters, some of the background bits or whatever, but that's additional flavor. It's not the meat and potatoes of the story.
Yeah. Anyone who's seen the Barbie movie, you got to read Beauty. Just because you'll feel it, you'll see it right there, and it just kind of works.
Cool. Cool. Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, form, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayo, and thanks again for listening.